Live from Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, it is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jared Stillman, former Titans receivers Chris Sanders.
What's up, man? How you doing, bro?
And Derek Mason.
What's going on?
And we are here as the Titans have got to figure out a way to get out of what feels like the worst slump around here in years. Mm. Do you guys know that Friday was the one-year anniversary of the Thursday night football game on the road at Green Bay where the Titans last won a road game?
Gosh.
1 year and 2 days ago. It has been that long. And I got to tell you guys, it's getting ugly around here. Whether it's Vrabel or the fans or the former coaches that for some reason keep calling into my show or TD going after the callers.
Meet me in the parking lot.
Whatever it may be. Like, it's getting ugly around here. This is a big one. If the Titans have any hopes of making the playoffs, and I don't have any hope for the Titans to make the playoffs, but if the Titans have any hopes for making the playoffs, they have to win today. If the Titans have any hopes of making this anything but a tank to the bottom season, they have to win today. And it's on the road to Jacksonville where they're a touchdown underdog.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's been a full – it's now been a full football season. If you count the 8 games after and then the 8 games prior, I mean, the 8 games this season, it's been a full football season since they've won an away game. And that has to weigh on you mentally. It does. You know, I remember going through, you know, patches and us going through patches, yeah. I think, you know, where we were decimated by injuries.
Right.
And we were losing because of that. But, man, I don't think we ever went on a drought like this where, you know, we couldn't win away from then, you know, Adelphia Stadium. Yeah. You know, but right now, they can't find a win at home. I mean, on the road. And it baffles me because this is the same team at home.
Yeah.
It's not like they're taking 11, yeah. well, 22 new guys yeah. and then, hey, y'all play on the road. No, they don't do that. Yeah. I mean, it's the same exact team. So I'm trying to figure out what's the deal. Why is it they can't win at home? I mean, they can't win away from Nissan Stadium. And then when they're at Nissan Stadium, it's just like a tale of two teams. They yeah. play explosive at home, and then away, it seems like they can't fine points.
I mean, it just looks like two separate teams. And when you talked about it, when they're at home, I mean, they look like world beaters. The defensive line is getting after the quarterback. The secondary is playing decent. Then you got an offense when they're running the ball. Derek gets 100 yards. But then when they go on the road, they just look like a totally different team. And I always use this little slogan, this little thing that I say all the time. If you keep putting on the same record, you're going to consistently hear the same song. And we keep hearing the same song on the road. The offensive line is not protecting. The quarterback play has been okay. You got the secondary that's giving up explosive plays. We keep hearing that. So I keep asking myself, well, how is it going to change? I mean, they're going against a Jaguars team that got blasted against the San Francisco 49ers. So, you know, they're going to be hungry to get a win. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think they need to come out strong and hit them in the mouth quickly.
I think what's disappointing, too, is to your point about the road games. It's been the same game every
yeah.
time. You know, outside of the Browns blowout, it's been the same game. The Titans can move the football. They get down to the red zone because they can't block and they can't make contested catches. They don't score touchdowns. They end up kicking field goals. The defense gives up too many explosive plays at the wrong time, can't get off the field when they need to get off the field on defense, and they can't protect the quarterback. And I think it's been the same story in the Saints game, the Colts game, the Pittsburgh game, the Buccaneers game. It's been the same story almost every time. And so that's really frustrating to me. And to your point, like when they're at home, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, they pass protect when they're at home.
Yeah.
Like I don't get it. They block in the red zone when they're at home and they go on the road. You cannot tell me that the silent count is that prohibitive from you being able to have success.
But,
and to that point, like, you guys have played a lot of places in your careers. Mm-hmm. I understand Pittsburgh on a Thursday night might be like a very hectic environment. You can't tell me that Tampa Bay last week was like, oh my God, we can't hear the signals here in Tampa Bay.
Well, I mean, there's a difference. And this is when, you know, because you have a bad offensive line, playing at home helps. Because the crowd is not a factor. I can hear what's going on down the line. I can communicate a little bit better down the offensive line. When you go on the road, that advantage has been taken away from you for the most part because, like you mentioned, Pittsburgh, that is a damn loud place. I'm telling you, especially when you're backed up on your own end zone and they get that music going and that those fans start getting into it, it is hard. We've had many a false starts in Pittsburgh Stadium back then, Heinz Field. I don't know what it's called now.
AccuSure.
Yeah, AccuSure. I'm going to continue to say Heinz Field, okay? I remember that's Heinz Field. But it does come into play when you don't have a good offensive line. When you have a good offensive line, those guys know how to communicate in situations like that. When you don't have one, everybody panics in situations like that because they know they're at a disadvantage. So, to me, that is a part of it. But it's not loud the whole game. You know, that's just on certain situations.
Right. But it's like at Tampa, you know, like I get New Orleans and Pittsburgh. Right. But like Indy and Cleveland I get, but Indy and well,
Indy
Tampa.
Gets loud. Indy gets loud. Tampa, it just depends on where you're at, what type of game what type of game is going on. If it's a close game, you know, those fans will get into it for that particular moment. And then it causes – you know, a late jump by the right or left tackle. It causes false start. So, again, this is an offensive line that isn't good, and they need every advantage they can get. And when they're on the road, they don't have those advantages.
But just looking at the first series, they looked like world beaters. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were passing them all. They were passing. Everything was good. So
until they got to the 9-yard line.
Exactly. When they get to the red zone. So what's the difference between the first drive and the third drive? I mean, they were throwing the ball. Derek was running the ball well. Hop made a good, great catch. So what is it? What's the difference between the first and the third drive? Because it wasn't even loud. I think it boils down to, first I want to start with the offensive line. I mean, the technique is bad. I mean, they're not communicating. Look at the situation where White gets the sack. The offensive line is not communicating. If he's mugging the gap, when I say mugging the gap, that means he's getting ready to blitz that gap. There's no communication with the guard and the tackle. So I don't think it's a loud thing. I think it's a technique issue and understanding what they're doing. That's what I think the problem
is. They have problem with twist.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's that every time. And it doesn't matter if you twist on the guard and the tackle or center and the guard. Like, it does not matter what you do.
And that lends to communication. They're not communicating well across the board. They're not talking across the board. Vrabel mentioned that. I took it as Vrabel saying, you know, the key to success is communicating on the defensive side. He didn't say it, but the defensive side, they don't communicate enough. But also, you can flip that to the offensive side. Those offensive linemen, they need to communicate.
Yes.
That is why having a Ben Jones at center was so important. Remember at the beginning, the thing was Ryan Tannehill would have more say. He would be calling more protections. Mm-hmm. Who was doing that? Ben Jones was doing that. He didn't have to worry. Ben made sure everybody knew what they were doing. They don't have that this year.
So then I think the second part about this, too, is in a much larger discussion, is there's a lot of heat right now on Mike Vrabel. I don't know if he's handling it well right now. And a loss this week it feels like with each loss, it feels like the anger towards Vrabel around town gets stronger and stronger. And we're told ownership loves them, but who knows with them because we were told that they love John Robinson and then they, boom, just fired him. Yeah, I mean, that was like mafia execution style, you know. Hey, you know, come to the house. So we want to see family wants to talk kind of thing. But, I mean, I don't know, like, I think Vrabel might be getting to a point where there may not be a way for him out of this.
I think he's frustrated by asking the same. Everybody's asked the same question, especially on the road, like what we're talking about now. We're talking about the offensive line. We're talking about the defense getting a
better. But he's not stupid. He knows he's got to get it right.
I know, but with him being a competitor, number one, he hates to lose. That's number one. Number two, when somebody asks him the same question, he doesn't have an answer for it, then he gets frustrated because he sits there and he kind of pouts a little bit. And when you have a head coach that is a competitor that pouts the whole time, it's just a recipe for disaster, and we're actually seeing that because he's really, really frustrated.
Well, he's trying to – I mean, if they lose today
– oh, man.
I can't see them, you know, moving forward. How much energy are they going to have to come out to play the remainder of the season? Listen, they have to. They got to play. But each and every game, now you're looking at the grim, you know, sort of end – of we're not making the playoffs. That's definitive. If you win a day, at least you give yourself a little hope.
Yeah, you tell the locker room
exactly.
can tell themselves, hey, guys, nobody out here believes in us, but screw them. We got a chance.
Absolutely. We control our own destiny. Well, if you lose today,
you're out. You know you suck.
You're out. And then how do you convince these guys each and every day to go out there and give it 100%, strap up their helmets, play as if they're going to the playoffs? How do you get them then to do that? But he understands and realizes, like, listen, I don't have a good team, and there's nothing I can do about it. Yeah, I can move guys here and there, but we still end up with the same problems. You know, this is a team that is low on depth, that is low on playmakers, and a team that just hasn't, you know, they've hit this streak the last year, half a year, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. They've hit this point where nothing they do works. It may seem as if it works, but ultimately, the end of at the end of it, the answer is what we're doing ain't picking up wins.
You mean because they took a guard with the 11th overall pick?
I mean, whether they took a guard at the 11th overall pick, or whether they didn't stockpile the offensive line like they should have, or, you know, guys like Treylon Burks and Chika Conquo are not showing up. There's a bunch of things. And then you got to blame it on the head coach, too. You made coaching moves that hasn't worked. They haven't worked up until this point.
Well, you guys talked about the communication with the offensive line. And Vrabel promoted his third offensive line coach, who has no experience in the NFL as an offensive line coach, outside of being the third offensive line coach. He promoted him to being the head offensive line coach, and in a Vrabel-like fashion, you know, crosses the arms and is like, trust me, this will work, I know. Yeah. And then now you two are talking about communication issues on the offensive line, and to me, that's coaching. Like, when you use technique, you use communication. That's coaching. Like, that is the coach. And so Vrabel went out and promoted a guy he knew, inexperienced guy. I don't care that he coached offensive line at Sheboygan State. That doesn't matter. When your offensive line was as bad as it was last year, you fire the line coach, you know you're going to have a new offensive line, you better go pay top dollar for a veteran offensive line coach that's got some skins on the wall and not some guy that had been like the coach at Colgate before showing up here. And so that's to your point about the coaching move that, like, when it doesn't work, it becomes indefensible. Mm-hmm. And Vrabel's doing a lot of that, and I think that's where the frustration comes from, Chris, is that he doesn't have an answer to his screw-ups.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, too, I was talking to Brad Hopkins. We did an event about a couple of weeks ago, and I said, what's the problem with this offensive line? He said this. He said these guys haven't played together. And he said also it's the scheme, and he kind of talked about the situation about if a linebacker mugs the gap, they know that they're not blocking a guy. They know that it's alert to block that gap. So if you have a situation where the offensive line is struggling and they haven't played together, you got guys that are playing musical chairs, you got Brunskill out, you got Dillard out, you got all these guys that are out, and then you're inserting new guys in, and they haven't played together, then the communication is definitely going to be off. So, yes, it's a scheme thing, but also it's a technique thing.
Coming up next, we're going to take a look at the big four storylines of today's game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. We will do that next. We'll move the chains live from Twin Peaks in Cool Springs. It is not just any pregame show. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Titans and Jags, it's the award-winning pregame show live at Twin Peaks in Cool Springs. Once again, come on out to Twin Peaks, two locations out here in Cool Springs and Madison, with 29-degree beer and wall-to-wall sports. They'll have all the games today, all the games every day out here at Twin Peaks. It is time as we take a look at the big four storylines in today's game, where we move the chains, and of course we start at first down. First down. Will Levis last week against Tampa Bay, 19 of 39 for 199. He took four sacks and threw an interception towards the end of the game, a quarterback rating of 53.3, which I think was hurt significantly by that interception Guys, what's your evaluation so far through three games? We've seen one great game, one good game, and then last week against Tampa Bay. How do we feel about Will Levis? Chris?
I mean, just like those two games that he played well, I mean, he made some good passes, but it's still hard to evaluate because you got an offensive line that's struggling. They gave, just like you said, they gave up 13 hits last week and four sacks, so I'm still waiting to see him play better than when he played against the San Diego Chargers? Did he have four? No, Falcons, where he had Falcons, four, yeah. four touchdowns. But I'm still trying to figure out, is he still the guy? I mean, I understand in there, but with the offensive line struggling, with guys playing musical chairs on the offensive line, I'm still trying to figure out, can this guy be the guy? That's kind of what I'm looking at.
Well, I think he has the makeup of being, I'm not going to say an elite quarterback. I think he's, to me at this point, I can envision him being Ryan Tannehill, a good quarterback that can play some really, really good games. You know, he may, you know, throw you into a loss every now and then, but for the most part, it's okay. Every game is going. This is what it's going to be. I need help from the running back. I need guys up front to do their job. I can get you to where you need to go, but I got to have help.
That arm power doesn't make you think that he could be better than Tannehill?
No.
I don't. It just depends. It starts with the offensive line. He's been sacked 10 times. How many games has he played? Three or four?
Three
games, and he's been sacked 10 times already.
33 times.
Okay. So you got to solidify that offensive line first.
Are you talking about that for, like, him being Tannehill for right now or him being Tannehill forever?
I'm saying as we sit right now, to me, what I've seen – And maybe as we start to see more, it can change. But right now, I think he's a Ryan Tannehill. He's a guy that can win you some games. He may lose you a few games. But if he has the people around him, you mentioned Tua all the time. Is it Tua? Is it the receivers? I mean, Tua was okay before he got Tariq. You know, and then he just exploded, which tells me he's a good quarterback. He's Ryan Tannehill. He's a good quarterback, but once you surround him with some playmakers, he goes from being good to elite. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily because of him, because who he has around him. That's Will Levis to me. He's that Tua, that Tannehill, that if you put enough people around him, he will come off as an elite quarterback. Not to say that he's bad, but he will. People around him will elevate him instead of the quarterback elevating everybody else. Tua's being elevated by Waddle, Tariq, and those guys. That's Will Levis. And with the arm strength, he can be that guy that many look at and say, and that may, I'm not going to say be fooled, but think because he has the talent, he is an elite quarterback. Mm-hmm. When in actuality, he's a good quarterback. So to me, they can win with Will Levis a lot of games, but that's not going to start happening until he gets surrounded by a bunch of some playmakers other than D-Hop and Derrick Henry.
And I think that Falcons game was kind of misleading. I mean, I'm not putting him down.
Yeah, because they play man-to-man all game.
Man-to-man. Yeah. Thank you. Because everybody, oh, he's great. Yeah. If it's cover one and they're man-to-man outside, I just throw the ball and let your playmakers make the play. But what happens when the secondary starts to confuse you? What do? Do you panic or do you make mistakes? I want to see him get in a situation to where he threw three interceptions in the game, and it's 2 minutes left in the game. You got two timeouts, and you got to go win the game. Mm-hmm. If he goes and does that and overcomes that adversity and go wins in the game, then now I start to put him in that echelon.
Well, and here's the other thing, too, when it comes to Levis, which is that I think is kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. He and Tannehill played the exact same game. Like, and now they're different, right? Like, mm-hmm. Tannehill's probably, you know, more cerebral, probably sees things before they happen mm-hmm. a little bit more than Levis, and Levis has more talent, you know, throwing the ball down the field much better than Tannehill. That being said, 27 points at home a game for Tannehill, 28 in the one game for Levis. They go on the road, mm-hmm. can't score in the red zone, can't protect the quarterback. You know, they're in the game, but they're never really winning the game mm-hmm. with that quarterback. It's the same game. Doesn't matter who the quarterback is. It's the same game. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, so who do you tend to put that on? I'm not going to put it on Tim Kelly.
I think Kelly's doing a good job.
I think he's exactly. Yeah. I think Tim Kelly's doing a good job. He's working with what he has. So if we believe that Tim Kelly is just working with what he has, then who do you sort of, you know, shift you know, sort of the blame to why this season is going the way it is. Obviously, the offensive line, but I think it's more than that.
Do I get a vote?
Yeah.
Vrabel.
I think, you know, and we laugh about it, but I think it has come to a point where that message, even though guys are hearing it, I'm not sure if they're listening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really not. I mean, there were times where, you know, listen, whether it be here in Nashville or in Baltimore or with the Jets, it's like you start to feel when the locker room is hearing the coach rather than listening to the coach. Yeah. They may not say, we're going to go out, we're going to do our job because we got a job to do. We get paid handsomely doing it. But there's a difference between, you know, listening and taking what he's saying and then going out of the field and then applying it to hearing it and saying, okay, I heard it. Now I'm about to go ahead and I'm tired of this. I'm going ahead and do my own, not necessarily do my own thing, but it's like, man, whatever. You've said everything in the book and nothing's changed.
But do you think that's happening with the defense? You know what I'm saying? It's because it's everybody's saying the same thing. We need to execute better. We don't need to give up the big plays. Everybody's saying it, but then you look at the Bucs game, they're consistently giving up explosive plays, and then the front's not putting any pressure. So just like you said, are they hearing or are they listening to what the defensive coordinator wants or the head coach?
So, you know, whether – I try so hard not to say, yes, blame it on the coach, put it on the coach, but you have to because it's been his hires. It's been, you know, the players that he, along with the GM, you know, Robinson and now Rand Carthon, these are the guys they went and got.
They collaborated on.
Exactly, and they brought him in, and it's not working. So, to me, it's the evaluation of the players. Are you a good evaluator of players, head coach? Mm-hmm. And then, once you get them, can you then coach them? I was saying for years, get rid of the quarterback's coach because every quarterback that you had hasn't been able to develop. I'm not going to give you Ryan Tannehill because Ryan Tannehill spent six to eight years in Miami.
He was
who he was when he got here. The other quarterbacks that you drafted, these young quarterbacks, none of them developed to be anything, not even really backups. So you change the quarterback's coach, Charles London, who I like, and you see the development in both Will Levis and Malik Willis, even though Malik Willis still has a ways to go, but you see the development. Do you see any other development across the board with any other position? That's the question that we need to be asking.
That takes us to second down. Speaking of defense, this was Jeffrey Simmons after the game on Sunday. And again, the defense, you know, it wasn't great, but they gave up 20 points. And this was Jeffrey Simmons kind of voicing his frustrations.
I feel like we're playing great defense. We're playing good defense, and they made a play. Baker just throwing the ball down the field. Mike Evans made a play. Godwin made a play. Like I said, I think we were rushing them pretty good. Moving them off the spot a lot. We got some quarterbacks hits on them, and like I said, we just didn't make enough, I guess.
I guess we just didn't make enough, Jeffrey Simmons says. By the way, sorry about that.
That's
my fault.
That sounded like TD.
But I felt like Jeffrey Simmons' frustration after the game on Sunday was not the offense stinks and we're doing our part, but more so stop coming over here and asking about all the things that went wrong on defense because we only gave up 20 points and this is the NFL. Like, Mike Evans is going to make plays because this is the NFL. Like, we gave up 20 points. This happens every game. We give up 20 points. We give up 22 points. We don't get a stop at the most important part. You bring all the cameras over here. Go talk to them. I understand Jeffrey Simmons' frustration, but it doesn't look like this is going in the right direction here.
No, it doesn't. And this is what, you know, I understand what you're saying too, Jared. And this is what happens eventually when teams are losing and you feel in your mind or many outside of the building feels, well, this group of guys aren't doing their job. And this group of guys are, but because this group of guys aren't doing their job, they're on the field too long, which eventually the dam breaks and, you know, points are everywhere. They're getting to that point where the defense, they're not going to say it, but keep on, they lose this game. It only gives up 21 points, but the offense can't score nothing but three. Watch what those defensive guys start to say. They're not going to point fingers, but watch what they, because Big Jeffrey alluded to it. Like, listen, we're getting pressure. We're pushing him off his spot. We're getting him outside the pocket. We're doing the things that, you know, we should be doing, but we can't score points as well. But my thing to him is, and the defensive coordinator, Shane Bowen, is there was one guy on that field, and I said this before they played him, it's one guy on that field that you bet not let beat you. Just like you said, J.J. Watt, if J.J. Watt beat you, somebody needs to be fired. Mm-hmm. There's one guy that you couldn't let beat you, and his name was Mike Evans. One guy.
Yeah,
and you know what that one
you,
guy? Exactly. He beat you. Yeah. You know, yep. If Godwin beats you, okay. But one guy. Not us, is Mike Evans. And you know what? Mike Evans beat y'all all while dropping three passes, one for a touchdown and two big ones.
You know, hey, you remember back in the day when the offense wasn't clicking?
Yeah.
Who was the guy who would be cussing the offensive coordinator out? Blaine Bishop.
Yes. But he would.
Boy, he would cuss
because those defensive guys, they man, Chris is right.
Yeah, he would cuss the offensive coordinator out. If we wasn't playing well and we have a whole bunch of three and outs, Blaine Bishop going to let you know. He going to let you know, hey, we are doing our job. Y'all need to do your job. So we had to pick it up. So I don't know who's going to do that on the defense. And I know nobody wants to cause animosity because, you know, with that situation. But if you look at some of the explosive plays that the secondary's been giving up, look at Evans, 143 yards. Johnson from Pitt, 90 yards. Chase, 73. Cooper, 116. They're playing good up front, but on the back, and they're giving up explosive plays. So it's just a situation that's kind of tough.
That takes us to third down.
Third down.
So how about this? Jacksonville is tied for 26th in the NFL with 18 sacks. You, by the way, and it feels like the Titans never get any sacks, they have 24. So Jacksonville has significantly less sacks than you have this year.
Right.
Jacksonville, the only teams that have less sacks than Jacksonville, Denver, Carolina, the Giants, and Chicago. So the crap of the crap, and then Denver, who's turned it around a little bit here lately. Does this give us any hope for the offensive line today? They'll be without Andre Dillard, thank God. So they'll have Raidens at left tackle, Skoronski at left guard, Brewer at center, Brunskill at right guard most likely, which we'll keep an eye on, and Hubbard at right tackle. Does that give you any hope that the Titans will be able to protect Will Levis today?
No.
Chris?
Same offensive line.
Survey says no.
So you've got a team, two sacks quarterback that you're playing this week, and you guys still think there's no chance that this line is going to be able to protect a quarterback.
But here's the thing. Josh Allen has 9 sacks. So who do you think they're going to put him on the worst offensive line guy? So he's going to get a sack. So offensive line is struggling, and I just think – I mean, even last week, the Bucs' defensive line was okay. But they still got 4 sacks. So what's going to be the difference between a Jags defensive line? They're going to get 4 or 5 sacks.
This is what it is. You always say there's at least one of these games on your schedule, whether you're in high school, college, or the pro level.
That's where I get my stats.
Stat games. Absolutely. Stat games. You walk. Chris, he know.
Oh, when Cincinnati Bengals.
You know, when you go into this game.
2003
you look at,
Houston, Texas.
Exactly.
All Houston, my Texas. Passes for exactly. 100 yards.
It was like, okay, this is a stat game right here because they have nobody that can cover me or they have nobody that can block me. This is where we get our stats up. This is where we start twisting and bringing blitz. We can get our stats up. For the Jacksonville Jaguars and any other team that comes and play the Tennessee Titans or host the Tennessee Titans, that offensive line is a stat game for them. They are going to get, whether it's pressuring the quarterback, whether it's tackle for loss or sacks, it's a stat game. Why? Because this offensive line is bad. There's no way around it. There's nobody on that offensive line right now, including Skoronski, right now, that has proven they are starters in this league. they're all backups. Now, Skoronski can get better, and I believe he will, but at this juncture, all these guys are backup. You got five backups blocking for a rookie quarterback going against starting defensive linemen.
With receivers that can't catch.
Exactly. So that's a recipe for disaster.
But look at what the Bucs did last week. I mean, they sent everybody on every play. So if they're sending linebackers, they're sending safeties, what is that telling you? That the offensive line can't protect
everybody? You know my favorite thing the Buccaneers did last week? On the first, like, true third down passing situation, because the third down's early on the drive, like third and one, they ran it with Derek, you know, whatever. The first true third down, third and goal from the nine, they decided, and this had to be a game plan during the week, they're like, all right, this is what we're going to do if they do this. Titans go shotgun, five guys out there, empty in the shotgun, and they just took their best defensive lineman, Vita Vea, and said, okay, you're going to go on their worst offensive lineman, Andre Dillard. And within 2 seconds, he had the quarterback, which is embarrassing.
I'm trying to figure out how, again.
Like, the coaches should see that and say, time out.
Yeah.
You know, like,
But they can't. There's nothing they can do. I mean, obviously, they can change the play, but then you minimize what you can do in a passing game. You just hope, like, man, just stay on him for a second.
No, you cannot hope that.
2 seconds.
You know better than that.
Hey, man, it's they've got to a point, and I don't understand, like, listen, you're just not good on the offensive line, and there's nothing physically they can do right now. I don't understand Dillard. I just don't get it. 6'6", 300-something pounds, first-round pick, and you playing like a pillow? I don't understand people like – I don't understand people with that type of ability.
Like, how did you get to this level?
Yeah, like, how did you get to this level? And then once you get here, you can't, like – you can't play. Like, I'm watching you, and I'm like, you cannot play this position that you got drafted to. You can't.
And Arden Key showed him in camp.
But remember what Vrabel told us that happened was, oh, no, well, Arden Key's just really, really good.
No.
And Arden Key
ain't done anything.
Exactly. He's a backup.
That's moving the chains. Coming up, we'll take a look at the offense if we haven't talked enough. There's another element of this offense that is absolutely, positively driving me crazy that I want to hit on next as we go inside the playbook. We'll do that with our two wide receivers here. Live out at Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, it's the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Crazy.
Let's go inside the playbook here on the offensive side of the football for the Tennessee Titans. Okay, we've talked at length about, you know, Will Levis. I think we're like, wait and see, but okay with Will Levis, right? Anybody have a problem with that?
No.
Okay. I think we know the offensive line stinks. We've complained about them enough so far through the first 30 minutes of this show. We'll probably complain a little bit more. I think we all think Tim Kelly's doing fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Why can't these receivers catch? You know, the ball Levis put out there for Nick Westbrook-Ikhine to start the second half last week at Tampa, like, it would have been a tough catch to make because he would have had to extend his arms, but he could have caught that ball. It wipes away a 35-yard gain. Chigakonkwo, I don't know what's wrong with him. Like, he doesn't even look like a high school player right now trying to catch a ball. And they're not the only ones. Wiley had a drop where Levis put a ball up for him to go get it so that the DB couldn't get it because he's using Wiley's size, and Wiley drops it. And Phillips drops a screen pass. Receivers, help me out here. Why can these guys not catch? And how much of that is a factor, you know, in the terribleness of the offense right now?
It's unfortunate. Beside D-Hop and, you know, he's had one or two drops that, you know, we look at him like, man, and like, I excuse his drops because it's like, he never really drops the ball. So it's like, man, you dropped, okay. It was a hard catch, but if anybody can catch it, it could be you, but you didn't catch it. You even said, I should have caught it, but you didn't. So D-Hop is in a different category by himself. I can excuse him because he's made so many plays for this offense. If it wasn't because of him, I mean, his offense probably would be averaging maybe 10 points a game.
Can I tell you that I almost wish they hadn't signed DeAndre Hopkins right now, and I'll tell you why.
What did I tell y'all?
Because they lucked into DeAndre Hopkins. You know, the fact that Arizona waited to release him until after everybody had spent basically all of their money, and the Patriots are bigger cheap asses than you are for some reason. I don't know. But had they not signed DeAndre Hopkins, the incompetence of Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel in the offseason would be like quadruple what it is now, because they'd be looking at a starting receiver group of Nick Westbrook Akine and Chris Moore. And I like both guys for what they are. Moore probably needs to get the ball a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's embarrassing for the NFL. And so they end up signing DeAndre. So it's like, well, you know, we did sign DeAndre right at the last second. You got lucky. You didn't draft a receiver. Mm-hmm. You didn't go into free agency looking for receiver. You didn't do any of that because you guys are incompetent. And so, you know, and that's why I'm starting to say, like, oh, I wish they hadn't signed DeAndre so that we could all, like, I think I have no faith in this administration. Zero. I have no faith in Rand Carthon. I have no faith in Mike Vrabel. And had they not signed, had they not lucked into DeAndre Hopkins, I feel like more people would be seeing what I feel like I'm seeing.
Well, I mean, based upon drops, you're right. Chig has four, Traylon has three, and Traylon only has played, what, six, five games?
Yeah, he never plays any.
Hop has three. I look at Hops and say, that it is what it is. But you have way too many drops with receivers. What what I'm trying to figure out is
DeAndre
this.
Hopkins also has two pass breakups that have been intercepted. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I look at it and I try to figure out, okay, why are guys dropping balls? A lot of times it's a lack of concentration, them ready to make a move before they actually secure the ball. But as I watch Chig Okonkwo more and more, Traylon Burks more and more, I'm not sure it's they're not comfortable to me catching the football. Mm-hmm. They're not natural catchers of the football. Whenever you see a natural catcher of the football, it comes at ease. Like, he catches it and it's just like a fluid motion. You catch it and you get up the field, or you catch it, you get down, do whatever you do. It's not like, oh, I'm struggling to catch, and then you start to make your move and you start to stumble because, mm-hmm, oh, I got the ball. Chig Okonkwo seems like, and let me know if I'm wrong, Chris.
Yeah.
Chig doesn't feel like a natural catcher.
Nah.
It seems like even when he catches the ball, he struggles with catching the football. Traylon is not a natural catcher. He struggles at times. Sometimes he can make it look like he's easy, but then other times it's like he's fighting to catch the football.
Right. Look at A.J. Brown. When A.J. Yeah. Brown catches the ball, it's just like second
it's
nature.
What
when A.J. Brown catches the ball, it looks like a first baseman. Like it's just like, exactly, yeah, right into the mitt.
Just like what Derek D. May said, it felt natural.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing about it is, I'm looking at Chig. I want to go back and talk about coaches evaluating players. When you talk about evaluating players, Chig had the same thing that he did at Maryland. They talked about he couldn't catch the football, so why would you bring him in here if he couldn't catch the football? Then he gets into camp, and he looks like a world beater. I mean, he's catching balls.
And he had a good season last year for a backup tight end. He had a good season.
So maybe it's a confidence issue. I mean, you know, if you drop a couple of balls early, your confidence is going to be shot. Maybe he needs that big catch to get him back to where he needs to be. But that was the same knock on him where he was in Maryland. He couldn't catch the football, and he was in coach and a general manager. I know that he's inconsistent, then why would I put him in my organization if he's going to be inconsistent?
Well, to me at this point in his career, he is not a starting tight end.
That's my thing. Chig is a supporting actor, mm-hmm, who does not need to be put out there on the front of a Hollywood hit, mm-hmm, and they tried to make him a lead, and it's bombed at the box office.
Yes. No, you're right, because, you know, some guys are best when – they're not the first option when they're playing back to someone else. He was playing the background to the tight end last year. So when he came in, it was like, okay, you know, I catch a few balls. There's not much responsibility. I really don't have to block. I can just go out there and catch a few balls. Well, it seemed to be working then because he wasn't getting a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But now I take a guy that is truly meant to be a backup or a second tight end. Now I say, you are the starter. Some guys don't know how to handle that. More pressure, mean more responsibility, brings more pressure. And he can't handle the pressure of being a starting tight end in this league. He's more of a secondary guy than a guy that you say we're going to game plan to get you the football. Well, it's just been proven.
And, Dean, let me ask you this. You know, they talked about when he first came in that he struggled to learn the playbook. And Coach Vrabel said he wants players to play fast. Mm-hmm. So do you think that him adding more stuff of learning the playbook is limiting him from not making the catches because he's thinking so much?
That could be a problem.
You know, because you can tell that he's playing a little tentative.
Yeah.
You can tell that he's playing like a step off because he's not just – He's struggling to catch the football. It's not like
the one he did. He dropped the one in the end zone. He dropped the one right there in his bread basket.
Even the one he caught.
But the one he caught was like,
exactly.
I caught it.
I did it.
I think that, and again, I go back to the incompetence of Carthon and Vrabel. And again, I don't know who's pulling the strings or anything, but they're together. So they're, you know, this is on their resume. I thought it was crazy that they did not bring in a, because the tight end market was kind of cheap, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the going rate for a tight end this offseason was about $4, $5, $6 million. Mm-hmm. That they did not bring in an established veteran tight end to be the backup tight end so that if this happened, it's like, okay, well, we can put this guy in there now and we can give him the ball more, as opposed to their other option, which was drafting a guy in the fifth round.
I thought they would sign Hooper.
I thought they would, too.
Just to a two-year contract for about $4 million. He didn't get much money.
He's making $225 with the Raiders.
Exactly. So you got a guy that started to come on, because I was on him hard the first half of the season. But then once he started to come on, I was like, okay, they have something in him. He has a good rapport with Ryan Tannehill. Mm-hmm. They have something going. But they chose not to sign him back to a veteran, really a veteran minimum contract. You allow him to go and thrust this young guy into a position that he wasn't ready for.
Yep.
And now you're seeing it. Now you're now you have no other recourse but to play him.
Well, they could put Wiley in there.
I like Wiley.
Kidding.
No, I like Wiley, but Wiley would end up being in the same situation as Chig.
Yeah, he's not a lead actor.
Yeah, he's not a lead actor at this point of his career right now.
He make you catch here and there.
Exactly. So he's a guy that plays second fiddle and do a really good job until he learns how to play football in the NFL.
Let's take a look at the defense on the other side. I feel like we've talked enough about
sad.
The line,
Levis,
and the receivers and everything else. And you know what gets me to, just looking back at free agent, and not like every free agent you bring in is going to be a great player. I understand that. But it's not like the Titans, didn't spend any money in free agency. They didn't spend a lot. But when you're spending $10 million on Andre Dillard, that's like four different like legitimate players that you could have brought in. But instead, you had to write the check to Andre Dillard, who, as you pointed out in the last segment, cannot play in the NFL.
Hey, show your feelings, man.
Defense on the other side. We're live out at Twin Peaks in Cool Springs. It's the award-winning pregame show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Trevor Lawrence, Christian Kirk, Calvin Ridley, Travis Etienne, Evan Engram, the Jacksonville Jaguars on offense. They're doing okay.
Yeah.
They're not elite. They're doing okay. The Titans defense, for the most part, when you take a macro view of it, it seems like they're doing a good job to an extent because they do hit the quarterback some. They do, you know, they keep the games in the 20s. They haven't given up 30 points or 40 points or anything crazy like that. Haven't gotten blown out so far this year on the road. They've held their own. They've kept the team in the game. And yet it just feels like whenever this team needs a big stop, they do not get it. Whenever the game is kind of hanging in the balance, instead of getting that big interception that puts the Titans in good position, instead of forcing that big fumble, they give up a 27-yard gain on third down and four. You know, it's just they just keep, whether it's Pittsburgh, Indy, Tampa, doesn't matter. Guys, what's up with the defense? Is it a bad defense? Is it an overworked defense? Is it an average defense? What are we looking at here, Chris Sanders?
Just kind of overall looking at it, I think that guys are looking for somebody else to make the play. And the reason why I say it, if you look at the touchdown that White had last week with the Buccaneers, look at all the guys that are kind of just coasting, waiting for somebody else to make a play. And I think we're looking at that. We're expecting Simmons to make a play all the time, Autry or somebody on the defensive line. But then you got a back end that guys are not making plays. I mean, if you look at what they're doing at home, they're playing ferocious on defense. They're consistently getting out of the quarterback. The secondary is playing okay. But then when they get, you know, on the road, it just looks like a totally different defense. No, once in a while. But then you giving up explosive plays. So, in my opinion, the overall scope of everything, somebody's waiting for somebody else to make a play, and that's why you're seeing what's happening.
Yeah. Here's a few things for you. Do we believe New Orleans is a a really good team? Nah, not really.
No.
But they have 18 turnovers, so they're plus 6. Pittsburgh, we know, they're just a team that's just fighting to stay relevant. And they're coached by a hell of a coach that keeps them in it. But you know why they are where they are? They are plus 18.
When you played the Steelers,
they were plus 10 with 18 turnovers.
When you played the Steelers, they were 7th in the NFL in takeaways. And I was like, that's the only way that a team that is in the bottom 25 of both offense and defense is winning games is because, A, they're blocking punts. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a good special teams unit. But more importantly, the reason why is because they're turning the football.
They're getting turnovers, yes. Denver, who we don't think is a good team, they have 16 turnovers. They're plus 3. So, to me, there's a direct correlation to, you know, how good you are, I believe, on defense and turnovers that you're getting, especially when your offense isn't up to par. This Titans team, and Vrabel even said, they got to find a way to get the ball back. Mm-hmm. They haven't been able to do that. They've given the ball away too many times, but they haven't been able to take the ball away from opposing teams. When you're not a great offense, you have to get some help for your defense. Yes, sacks are good. Pressures are good. But if they don't amount to turnovers, then only thing you're doing is just trying to survive another series. Mm-hmm. That's all you're doing. This team got to find out how to get turnovers. And nobody in the back end has the ability to consistently be ball hawks. Okay?
Well, and what you were talking about when you were talking about those three teams that you brought up, New Orleans might have the best secondary in the NFL.
Exactly.
And we saw that week one, you know, with Tannehill had some bad passes, but some of those were just really good plays too. Mm-hmm. I mean, one guy, you know, knocks the receiver down, which I thought should have been PI. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they hit the receiver, and then they hit the ball back to the other guy who intercepts it.
Yes.
That's a pretty good play. Pittsburgh has Minka Fitzpatrick back there, and they got T.J. Watt pressuring the quarterback. Mm-hmm. So that right there, I think, is probably why they have a lot of turnovers. And then with Denver, they've got maybe the best corner in the league in Surtain, and they've got maybe the best safety in Justin Simmons. You've got none of that, and the best defensive back you had, whether or not he's still good or whether or not he's still elite, different discussion, but the best DB you had, especially the best ball-hawking DB you had, you sent to the Eagles for a bag of football so you could put Elijah Molden on the field, and Elijah Molden, in my opinion, can't play in the NFL.
Yeah, and that's the problem with this team, because when you don't have that elite talent across the board, or you don't have that elite coach to coach that defense, then you got to be able to get turnovers. And the Tennessee Titans hadn't been able to get turnovers. Even when the Titans defense wasn't that good the year they went to the AFC Championship game, they were getting turnovers. You know, that's a bad defense. When you're not getting turnovers as a bad defense, be a long day. Yes, you may get some sacks. Yes, you may get some pressure. If you cannot generate turnovers, you keep the offense on the field, which means you stay on the field longer.
Yeah, and if you look at the secondary, they only got 2 interceptions. They got one by McCurry last week and got Bunting.
You said it right.
Bunting.
Bunting.
It's like baseball.
Bunting.
Like he's bunting the ball.
But they have 2 interceptions. And then also they need to make the plays when they're there. If you look at last week when they went against the Bucks, the fumble was laying on the ground. But also in the secondary, they got to come with some big picks.
Do you think the reason why the defense is not good is because they didn't, when it came to building the operation, do you think it is because they haven't drafted well with witnesses like other things? Why do you think it is that they are struggling so mightily on defense?
It's hard, but you spent money on who? Jeffrey Simmons, who you drafted, Tier Chart. You gave him a little money.
A little bit.
But he's a guy that you brought into your team as a free agent.
Archery Landry Key.
Yeah, Archery Landry. But even I'm just looking at those two. You spent the money, you know, to have them, you know, on your team. And for the most part, those two guys, they're working out. Simmons and Tier Tarp. Now, I don't get it like we think we should, because to me, Simmons has set the bar high, and he's not playing to that bar as of late. That doesn't mean he can't. He just hasn't been. I don't want to hear about a double team, triple team, because there are a bunch of defensive ends that are the ones that beat it, or tackles. They beat it.
Yeah, you don't think any team ever thought, you know what, let's double team Bruce Smith.
Exactly. They did, but Bruce still found a way to get to the passer. Yeah. But those other guys, Arden Key, Al-Shaer, who else?
Weaver.
Weaver. Guys they brought in this season to help, you know, solidify that defense. They're not doing the job consistently. So, Brayton, we have a lot of money for this defensive front, and it's only amounted to, what, 20-some sacks? And we're still giving up too many points. Why? Because our offense is not scoring enough. That's why 20 points, yeah, it's great, but it's too many damn points when your offense can't score.
Yeah, I mean, that's it.
Do you have any faith in the defense turning around today against Jacksonville?
If they was at home, yes. I mean, I would. Yeah, I agree with you. But it's always – Eric keeps alluding to that word that we keep talking about. You're talking about an inconsistent defense. You know, we talk about Simmons, and when he's at home, he's consistently getting at the quarterback. You got Autry that does the same thing. But when they're on the road, they're not really sniffing the quarterback. Yeah, last week they had three sacks. But you let Baker Mayfield have a big day when he's an average quarterback. So that's the problem. I think they need to, you know, be consistent on the road and also at home.
Let's take a look at the injury report. We'll do that on the other side here as we are live again at Twin Peaks out in Cool Springs, where the doors open at 11 o'clock. And again, two great locations out here at Twin Peaks, the one here in Cool Springs and out in Madison. Come on out. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Live from Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, it is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And again, Twin Peaks opening the doors at 11 o'clock both here and in Madison. So get excited about that. Let's take a look at the injury report and our inactives for today. Out today for Jacksonville, wide receiver Elijah Cooks, corner Tyson Campbell, who, by the way, is a very good player. Mm-hmm. Defensive tackle Devon Hamilton, outside backer Yasir Abdullah, and offensive lineman Cole Van Lannen.
Abdullah?
Out for the Titans. I think he's actually like a pretty good player.
Dang.
But out today for the Titans. Offensive lineman Andre Dillard. Good. Wide receiver Treylon Burks, who never plays anymore. Corner Sean Murphy Bunting. Linebacker Caleb Murphy. Linebacker Trevis Gibson. Offensive lineman Calvin Throckmorton, who they claimed off
of
waivers
from
Carolina. Well, I think he plays.
Oh.
But it would not be surprising to see him start, I think. He started seven games in Carolina. They waived him. You claimed him. I mean, can't be worse than some of these other crap bums you got out there.
Dang.
And quarterback Malik Willis is inactive. He is the third quarterback. Ryan Tannehill is officially the backup quarterback to Will Levis. So, any thoughts on any of that?
No, not really. I mean,
so
it
now
is what
let's,
it is.
Let's get to what I really want to talk about. Which is Mike Vrabel on the hot seat? Is Mike Vrabel approaching the hot seat? Now, I sometimes think that fans have a hard time of delineating the difference between hot seat and fired. Because when you're on the hot seat, you're still in the job, and you can coach your way off the hot seat. When you're fired, you're done, you're gone. So it's not saying that, you know, Vrabel should be on the hot seat does not mean Vrabel should be fired, but it means, should we start to think that maybe Vrabel's not the answer here? Do we think, and forget about the Patriots and the trade to the Patriots and the trade to another team, which I do think the Titans, you know, that may give Vrabel some serious, you know, security this year. If nobody does want him, then he would keep the job because the Titans would want to trade him. But do you guys think Vrabel should be on the hot seat? Do you think we're approaching that?
Yeah, because if this was any other team and we had to talk about that team and about how they performed over the last year, like the end of last season and the beginning of this season, I think we all would come to a consensus that, yeah, you should be on the hot seat. Yeah, we're not saying you need to be fired, but your job should be looked at very closely moving forward. And I think if, you know, if this team means what I believe it means to Amy, then yes, you have to hold your head coach accountable for what your team has not been doing. Again, that doesn't mean fire the guy. That means, hey, listen, Mike, you need to get this stuff right, okay? It's been we've had long enough, you know, to make sure that this team is in a position to start winning football games. So, yes, based upon what happened last year at the end of the season, based on what has happened this year at the beginning of the season, and we don't see it changing, then, yes, he should be on the hot seat. Again, I'm not saying fire the guy, but there needs to be some accountability. Like, listen, how are you going to change this?
Yep.
How? Give me a plan that's going to show me, a tangible plan that's going to show me this thing is going to turn around.
Yeah, and that's a great observation, D. It's not that he wants to get fired, but he needs to still answer some questions. I mean, we keep asking him the questions, but he's not answering. You know, like the situation with the offensive line. Offensive line is bad. We got Dillard in the offseason. Then also the secondary. Why is the secondary giving up so many explosive plays? And then also, why are we having so many bad situations in the red zone? I mean, those are the questions that we're asking and fans are asking. And, yes, I think he should be on the hot seat. Now that he's getting fired, that he's not asking the questions. He's kind of dilly-dallying around it.
I think what's tough for me about this is maybe threefold. First, there is the potential trade, and Vrabel's reputation outside here is much better than I think how Titan fans feel about Vrabel right now. And that's the first thing. You know, I don't think Vrabel outside gets any blame for this because everybody thinks, oh, well, they traded away A.J. Brown. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's not his fault. And so I think that that is the general perception in 49 states out of the U.S. I think the second, and that means that he would have value, mm-hmm. you know, as a tradable commodity. I think the second thing here is the age-old argument of personnel versus players and coaching and things like that. And it's incredibly diluted because we don't know really how much of a say or responsibility he has inside the personnel decisions that they make. And this whole collaboration thing, I think, is so incredibly stupid. But, I mean, they are sticking to their guns with this. And then the third part of this is if you're Amy Adams Strunk, and this time last year you fired John Robinson because he was drafting poorly, he was trading poorly, and the A.J. Brown thing kind of put yolk on all over everybody's face. Mm-hmm. Do you not still hold the belief that it was Robinson's fault and that the pain that you're feeling mm-hmm. now is from the mistakes that Robinson made? I'm not saying that's what I believe, mm-hmm. but I am throwing that out there as a discussion point.
I mean, if you are going to take the same approach with your GM and, you know, everything seems great, you sign him to a new deal, an extension, and then all of a sudden, you know, you just didn't like the job he was doing. So you just end up firing him in the middle of the season. Now, there may be a lot of reasons behind that you will never confide in the public. And I get it. I understand it. But still, it looks as if it was a knee-jerk reaction. That's what it looked like mm-hmm. because when and how you did it. So if you're going to take that approach with your GM, then doesn't that same approach, isn't that same approach, shouldn't it be taken with your head coach as well? Because essentially, you blame the GM. All right, you got rid of him, but nothing has changed. Mm-hmm. You're still the same team. The talent hasn't gotten any better. So shouldn't you take that same approach? And again, I'm not saying fire him in the middle of the season, but at least say, hey, listen, some things need to change. Either you need to, you know, get some players in here or you need to change some coaches around here because whatever you're doing right now, it's not working. You promoted an offensive line coach and offensive line got worse. So you got to change something. Something has to change within this organization. So if I kick the GM out because of whatever reason, why then shouldn't I take that same approach with the head coach in regards to putting him on a hot seat?
You know, Mike Vrabel always says, he always talks about accountability. He talks about the receiver's got to be accountable, players got to be accountable, the coaches got to be accountable. But now you bring in different guys like Dillard, you draft Skowronski, you have a secondary that's bad. Should you take accountability with that also? I mean, don't throw it on everybody else. Don't throw it on this person, that person, you know, the receivers, the defense, all those guys. But take accountability of that you brought some bad players in. and take it that situation.
I don't think that accountability is in Vrabel's vocabulary.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's like a very – he's good at talking about it, but I don't think
that's
he's
the point
actually
that I'm making.
Good at raising the hand and saying – like, so I said this on my show Friday, that because Jacksonville is 26th in the NFL in sacks with 18, you know, only Denver, Carolina, the Giants, and Chicago have less sacks this year than Jacksonville. All those teams suck.
You know – oh, go ahead.
But because of that – if we have another horrendous performance by the offensive line, I think Vrabel should fire the line coach tomorrow. And not so much as a, you know, I have no idea if this guy's doing a good job or not. There's no way for any of us to know who's a good line coach or who's not. We're not in the meeting rooms. We're not on the practice field. But almost Vrabel's got to do it because this guy had no experience to be put into that role. And it is Vrabel's way of putting the hand in the air saying, guys, I screwed up. I screwed up by making this guy the line coach. So I am firing him to show you that I am willing to admit to my mistakes.
Has he ever done that?
No.
Okay.
He's not going to do
exactly.
it. I tell you what, he should do.
The likelihood of him doing that is very slim because we saw it with the offensive coordinator. We see it at times with the special teams coach. We saw it with the offensive line coach even before they became a horrendous offensive line. He's going to give, and I commend him for it. He's going to give guys opportunities to, you know, done in a fashion that he wants it done.
But
he may give them more. He may give them too much leeway or too much time to do it. Exactly.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. We just said about accountability. Look at the situation, Mularkey. Mularkey didn't want to let his coaches go. What did they do? They fired him.
Well, they wanted to get rid of him anyway.
Yeah, but
Mularkey got this last calendar year. I think has given us a Mularkey got a raw deal.
Of course.
That's the point. He got
screwed over. And this is of all the things. I think John Robinson kind of got a raw deal too. But the one place where I lack sympathy for Robinson is the fact that he stabbed Mularkey in the back. Mm-hmm. And so, hey man, like, yeah, you got a raw deal. And I do think John Robinson got a raw deal, but you did the other guy dirty too. So just because you got dirty, but you were also doing others dirty.
That's what I'm saying.
But Mularkey got a horrendously raw deal. And
after a playoff win.
And to think about Vrabel, like, they've won three of their last 16 games.
Yeah.
That, if you were to start a season, and now we have 17 games, but if you were to start a season, let's say they lose today. They're touchdown underdogs. I think they're going to lose today. Let's say they lose today. So you're 3-14 in your last 17. That gets you fired in the NFL.
Yeah, it does.
That gets you. I don't care if your name is Vince Lombardi. Bill Belichick is about to get fired because his team sucks so bad. Mm-hmm. So, like, that gets you fired. And yet, there's this sense of, oh, it can't be Vrabel's fault. Can't be Vrabel. He's a great coach. And I'm like, I don't think that's true. And then the second thing that just drives me bananas is that I think the administration here, and that's Carthon, Vrabel, whatever they want to call it, the commission, the Supreme Court, whatever you want to call it, they're incompetent. And I go back to draft night. We're sitting right over there, right here at Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, and they're on the clock with the 11th overall pick. And we were talking about Will Levis because we knew that they were interested in a quarterback, that they had – been looking around at all the quarterbacks and, you know, all they wanted Stroud. They didn't get him. They wanted, you know, they brought in Richardson. They went to his pro day. Indy drafts him. They're sitting there at 11. There's one quarterback left, and we're talking about Will Levis. And they turn around and draft Peter Skoronski. And that night, they get up and they're like, oh, no. We're going to try him out all around the line and decide where he's going to play. Bull crap. They drafted him to play guard. He has not taken a snap at tackle in rookie mini camp, training camp, games. He hasn't taken a snap there. They drafted him to be a guard. Then the next night, they draft Will Levis. And I'm like sitting there thinking to myself, if you're going to do what you did to go get Will Levis the second night, that means that you view him as a franchise quarterback. Yeah. You do not do that. You take a guy in the third round like they did Malik, that's not drafting a franchise quarterback. You move up to the top of the second round, deal a third rounder next year. That guy is going to get at least 2 years as a starting quarterback to see whether or not he can play. That means you are putting your skin in for him as a franchise quarterback. Why would you draft a guard before drafting a franchise quarterback where you then let the rest of the teams in the league get a crack at drafting the franchise quarterback?
That's
incompetence.
That's the question that we all want to know the answer to.
Like, and to my point about competence and incompetence, trading A.J. Brown for Treylon Burks, which is what they did. I mean, it was a horrendous evaluation mistake. Horrendous. And it's the kind of risk that gets you fired if you make a mistake on it. But that's not incompetence. That's just bad evaluation. Like, I get it. Mm-hmm. They looked at Burks' skill set and thought he could be the next A.J., and, you know, we're going to be paying $100 million less in order to do this. And so hopefully if this guy becomes the next AJ, we'll have our cake and eat it too. Now, if that fails, you get fired. But at least that is a, like, that is sound logic in the NFL.
You got a plan. There's right. a plan. Yep.
This with the guard is not an important position in the NFL. It's like safety. It's just not important. Would you love to have a great guard or a great safety? Sure. Are you going to win the Super Bowl because you have a great guard? No. So you don't draft a guard over a quarterback. The only time you take the guard before you take the quarterback is if you don't think the quarterback's a franchise guy. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. You don't like Levis. You don't think Levis is good. You don't think he's going to be take the guard. Fine. But if you think he's a franchise guy, which you clearly did by taking him in the second round, you draft him at 11 because you don't let the other teams in the league draft your quarterback. Does anybody else see how freaking crazy this is? And then if he's a guard and you think he's so good at guard, you think he's going to be a superstar guard when he played tackle in college and there's still like a thought that he could play tackle and you don't have a left tackle because you've got Andre Dillard, why don't you get up there that day and say, he's a guard? Why does it have to be such a secret?
I mean, listen, you have valid points there because essentially if you're drafting a quarterback, especially in this year's draft, you look at the quarterback, you know, look at the quarterback position and say, okay, these are the four or five guys that we want to draft. And you evaluate him as a first rounder. And you know you need yourself a franchise quarterback moving forward. And you essentially you had a first round grade for him, I'm sure.
Can I give you an example of this? So in 2019, we were all at the draft. The Giants took Daniel Jones at six. Remember when they took Daniel Jones and Daniel Jones was the sixth pick? And it was like the Giants had, I think, three first-round picks that year. They had one there. They had one, I think, at 17 and one at, like, 30. And so they used that pick on Jones. And everyone's like, they should have waited until the 17th pick on Jones. And Floyd said, if you think he's your quarterback,
go get him.
You get him. Because you don't give anybody else the chance
right,
to get
absolutely.
Him. And so I don't understand the competence behind that, and nobody can make a valid point to me. People are like, well, they drafted Skoronski thing, and they were going to run it back with Tannehill, but then when Levis was there, they thought the value was good. I'm like, value doesn't matter when it comes to quarterback. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. The Eagles don't get bonus points because Jalen Hurts was taken in the second round, and Kansas City gets less points because they used two first-round picks and a third for Mahomes. It doesn't matter. You're playing quarterback versus quarterback, not, hell, he was drafted in the fourth round. That doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so, again, like, I can't get over that, and I won't. TD will join us from the stadium coming up next on the award-winning pregame show live from Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Crazy, man.
We are live from Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, where the Titans are getting set to take on the Jags here on the award-winning pregame show, 102.5, 106.3, the game, as we always do. We take a look at the game from the stadium where Teron Davenport joins us, ESPN, presented by The Beast Unleashed. All the adult beverage fun with zero calories, zero sugar, The Beast Unleashed. TD, Daniel Brunskill is back in the lineup after missing last week's game. I'll start right there. How has he looked so far in warmups?
Yeah, I missed the initial. Who did you say is back in the lineup?
Brunskill.
I'm sorry. I can't hear you. Say it again.
Daniel Brunskill, back in the lineup.
Okay. Yeah, sorry about that. It's really loud here. Yeah, no, Brunskill back in the lineup is really critical. I mean, you see him on the right side, and just the fact that, you know, that allows you to have Raiders at left tackle, is good, and Brunskill quietly has been one of the best linemen for them this year. So, yeah, I mean, that's really good. And you look at just how he is technically, you know, as far as, like, with slide protection and stuff like that, he's on point. Chris Hubbard, you know, is a guy they help a lot. So, yeah, having him in the mix is good.
TD, what do we think about Jacksonville and the fact that they are 26th in the NFL with 18 sacks? Only Denver, Carolina, the Giants, and Chicago have less sacks than Jacksonville, but an offensive line with the Titans that has had their issues on the road.
Well, I tell you, they may be that low ranking, but they have a guy by the name of Josh Allen who is, you know, responsible for almost half of those sacks. So that alone, you know, whether it's going at Raiders or Chris Hubbard, that's something that you got to watch out for. And I'm not saying he's Myles Garrett or anything like that, but you do remember how that game was. So you want to make sure that, you know, you're not caught up in situations where they're just, like, taking turns with him against one of those guys.
Now, TD, not only do the Titans have to do a good job on Josh Allen, I think the next most important player is Aluakon, the linebacker. This would be, you know, consecutive weeks where they face top-tier, top-notch, elite-type linebackers, and they haven't done a good job. You go back to you look at Tampa, then you go back to the Indianapolis Colts where they have problems with their linebackers. Do you see them having the same problems today with that linebacker group? More importantly, Aluakon.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Aluakon is a monster. He's one of the most underrated players in the league. And, I mean, he only had, like, 376 tackles, I think it was, last year. You know what I mean? And he has, like, 200 already now. All jokes aside, you watch him. Go back and watch the Saints game. You want to see the way that he can impact the game. You know, he had the pick six. He was all over the place. And he's someone they're definitely going to have to watch out for. But don't sleep on Devin Lloyd also, the you know, the fast, rangy linebacker out of Utah. You know, this is year two. From what I've been told, like, he's starting to get a lot better just as far as, like, his understanding of things, and it's allowing him to play faster. So both of those guys are going to be a problem. But, man, Aluakon coming up, and he has that size, right, to size up against Derrick Henry. So, that's going to be an interesting matchup.
Now, another area of concern to me for the Tennessee Titans, and maybe they are putting a lot of emphasis toward it, is the return game of the Jacksonville Jaguars. They have a hell of a return game, whether it be
– He's out.
He's out. So yeah, that's
he's
one
out.
Less
yeah,
problem.
Yeah, Jamal Agnew's out.
Yeah, that's one less problem that they have to deal with. So let's pivot from there. The secondary, the Titans. Now, they're going up against, I think, two of the best better combination of wide receiver in Christian Kirk and Calvin Ridley. What is it that you think they need to do from a secondary standpoint? Is it all going to be predicated on how the defensive front does, or do the secondary needs to play one of their best games of the season?
I think they need to play one of their best games of the season because you look at just the way Jacksonville has been able to isolate Christian Kirk at times. Like, it's funny you say isolate in the slot, but they'll find matchups in the slot will get him matched up against the safeties, you know. And then also, you know, they go 3-by-1 with him backside, and that helps too. I will say this, it'll be a little bit limited because Agnew is out. He's a guy that they like to package, you know, put in those 3-by-1 packages. But also they have another receiver, Zay Jones. I don't believe he's playing today either. So that will help just as far as the matchups are concerned. But, you know, the main thing is you got to stay on top of Christian Kirk. And when I say on top of, I mean, like, you know, those quick routes that he runs, you got to make sure that you tackle him and bring him to the ground because he is really good at yards after catch. And that's something I talked to Mike Vrabel about on Friday. You know, and he mentioned how you go back to A&M, Texas A&M, and this is a guy who did a lot of returning, punt return, kick return, and then also when he first got to the league, he did that. And, you know, those are the guys that typically do well after the catch.
You know, TD, just kind of switching to the offense a little bit. If you look at the Tennessee Titans in the red zone, they're 2 of 8 of scoring in the red zone, and they're 2 losses. You know, what do the Tennessee Titans need to do to score more touchdowns in the red zone?
Yeah, I think it's the first thing is you can't give up a sack. I mean, look, last week, you know, they get down to the 11-yard line, and they give up a sack, and it's, you know, they have to settle for a field goal. So you got that. I think you got to protect, you got to – I mean, I don't know why they don't use more like bunch formation and those type of things, you know, switch releases and do all that to get guys open immediately and let them catch the ball and get it in the end zone. I think another part of it is they got to make sure that, you know, Derrick Henry gets involved, you know. Run him, allow him to get the yards, and stay in front of the chains. No penalties. I mean, we just outlined about everything that you have to do to be effective in the red zone. But, I mean, that's really what it boils down to.
And also, just looking at this wide receiver core, there's been a lot of drops. I mean, NWA has had some drops, and, you know, guys are not making plays on the perimeter. With Kyle Phillips catching three passes for 61 yards, do you think Will Levis is going to look for him more, not just on third down, but making those explosive plays down the field?
Yeah, I think he is going to look for him more down the field. But, you know, the thing that I've really seen him do, and it's been pretty good to see, is him to learn to, okay, yeah, I want to take those deep shots, but underneath things are opening up. And that's why you see Kyle Phillips start to get, you know, a lot of those opportunities. He has 60 yards in back-to-back games, and I would expect him to have another one this week, you know, because he's a guy where he's a matchup problem, that shifty quickness that he has out of the slot. So that's something. And, oh, Derek, Nick Folk was just good for 50 yards.
Oh, nice.
Good, because last week he was out there from 51, and I don't know what happened on that kick.
Hey, TD, this is my last question. We're about to get off here. But me and my daughter was watching one of our favorite movies the other day. It was Shawshank Redemption. And this guy walked by. And my daughter was like, is that TD that you're doing the show with? I was like, nah, baby, that's Morgan Freeman.
Yo, you know what's so crazy? I'm going to tell you what's so crazy. So I was watching my daughter, Devin. I said, you know, Devin, I want you to see the shows that we used to watch when I was a kid. And this show by the name of What's Happening came on, right? And this guy named Rerun came walking in, and he was like, hey, no, Dwayne. Dwayne was like, hey, hey, hey. And there was a guy with glasses on. And he was like, what's up? And my daughter was like, you mean to tell me you do radio with a movie star? I said, no, that's not Chris Sanders. That's Roger Thomas. And on that note, I'm gone.
I am looking at the What's Happening cast.
Thank you, TD.
I don't know if you guys know this, but that show might be a little bit before my time.
Oh, it is happening. A little bit before your time.
Way before your time.
Is he the one with the glasses?
Yes. Raj.
I mean, honestly, crazy. It could have been any of these people from What's Happening.
No, but you looked at the right one. You knew exactly.
I saw some Chris Sanders with the glasses.
Wow. That's cool, man.
TD is presented by the Beast Unleashed. And again, a reminder when it comes to the Beast Unleashed, that it is all the adult beverage fun with zero caffeine, zero sugar, and again, all the adult beverage fun. Coming up next, picks to click. Who's going to click today against Jacksonville? Boy, it's time for a clicking one way or another. We'll do that coming up next. It is the pregame show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Picks to Click are brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment, live out at Twin Peaks and Cool Springs, where the doors have opened, the football is on TV, the beers are ice cold. Again, 29-degree drafts, wall-to-wall sports out here. Picks to Click on offense for the Titans, Chris Sanders.
Yes, sir. I'm going to go with Kyle Phillips. The reason why I'm going to go with Kyle Phillips, last week he had three catches for 61 yards, and I think Will Levis is going to have to get the ball that quick. And Kyle Phillips can run those choice routes, those slants, to protect him from getting hit.
Can I ask a question about Phillips? And I want both your honest opinions on this.
Yes.
All of his catches came in basically garbage time. Like, had to throw the ball. Tampa's going to probably play a little bit of a prevent defense, you know. When it's 3rd and 9 down around the goal line, where's Kyle Phillips? You know, early in the game. Where's the – like, I have a hard time getting on board with this Kyle Phillips renaissance, because everything he did came pretty much after the game was decided.
You want to see things as the course of the game goes. Mm-hmm. You want to see him be involved in the offense when it's not 2 minute and teams are playing a little bit off. I understand that part. I think Kyle's been doing a he's done a good job. He's caught the ball when it's come to him, and that's all you can ask him to do. Because there are
although
some
he did drop that screen pass last.
Yeah, he did. But for the most part, I think he's it's good to have him back in the lineup. My pick to click is Chris Moore. I think they got to get him involved in the offense. I know they're trying to make sure D-Hop get his touches, and he deserves them because he's capable of making things happen. But I think they need to use teams trying to take away D-Hop. Use that to your advantage. Find a Chris Moore, a guy that is capable of catching a football, a guy that has shown he can make the big play for you. He's been a consistent pass catcher for the offense. Use him enough to me. So my pick to click today is Chris Moore. He has to have a big game.
Chris, your thoughts on his pick to click?
No, I mean,
Chris Moore was my pick to click. So now I gotta think about who my pick to click's
going to be. No, I mean, I agree. I mean, he needs to get more opportunities. I mean, he's making explosive plays. He'll have one catch for 44, one for 39. They got to involve him early because if you look at away from D-Hop, he's been the most explosive wide receiver.
I need somebody to make a contested catch in the end zone. It's not going to be DeAndre Hopkins. He's going to be double-teamed or triple-teamed down there when they get in the red zone. It's not going to be Chigakonkwo. He can't make an uncontested catch. It's not going to be Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. It's not going to be Kyle Phillips. It's not going to be Josh Wiley. Which takes me to DeAndre. Like I got to go to DeAndre because somebody – I will throw it into triple coverage to DeAndre Hopkins in the end zone if I have to because – the chances of, again, you guys have played in the red zone. Chris, I don't know how much when you guys got down there that you came out of the game because your biggest skill set was your speed. Well, and at that point, you're not going to run through the end zone. No. You've made how many of your red zone catches in your career in the end zone, Derek, were contested catches?
A lot of them. Everything is contested down there,
And nobody can make them except DeAndre. So I'll go with DeAndre. And when people ask why the red zone's so bad, I'm like, well, because they can't block, so they can't run the ball, and they can't make contested catches.
And penalties.
And I think Will Levis has just got to put it up for DeAndre and let him make a play in the red zone.
Well, something's going to have to change because once you get into that part of the once you get into that part of the field, obviously things condense, but then it plays to the defense advantage. Why? Because they have the back of the end zone as the 12th man. So those safeties they don't have to sit back. They can play both the run and the pass.
Yeah, with Hopkins, where can you really put him? I know he can make the fade, but they're going to take that away and put a guy slightly over top. So you need a guy that can be in a slot that can kind of run those choice routes like Kyle Phillips. But at the end of the day, somebody's got to make a play.
Defense.
I'm going in the secondary. I'm going with Amari Hooker. Amari Hooker needs to make some plays. I mean, last year he would make some big time interceptions. If you look at his secondary, it was yours too, wasn't it?
No, I looked at Derek. Amari Hooker. You do Amari Hooker on your own time. I don't, you know. But
in the secondary, they got two picks with McCreary.
I think he sucks.
Yeah, he may suck, but somebody needs to make a play in that secondary. If you look at the secondary, he's the only guy that made a play free safety to make a play. So I'm going with Amari Hooker.
I'm going with my dude, the big fella, Tyre Tart.
Big T.
Another week. He played good last week. He had a sack. He was disruptive in the middle of the defense. He must have another one of those games. They're going to double team Jeffrey Simmons. So he must beat the single block just about every time. He must be disruptive in the run game as well as the pass game. So my pick to click of my man Tyre Tart. I predict he's going to have either a fumble recovery or an interception off a tip.
I'm going to go with the best player on the Titans defense this season, Roger McCreary. Roger McCreary's been the best player on that defense. And in this game, you know, he and Fulton are going to, on some level or another, be responsible for Kirk and Ridley. And if this game's going to get blown out away, it's going to be from those guys, unless you can continue to not stop the run, which they may try to do with Travis Etienne. Trevor Lawrence throws bad interceptions.
Yep.
And I don't know if that means that you'll be able to pick one off. I'm not even expecting McCreary to pick one off, but the tipped ball might be the key to intercepting Trevor Lawrence today. And McCreary, I think, is the best cover corner the Titans have. He's going to be lined up on either Kirk or Ridley. My guess is Fulton's lined up on the other one. I'll go with Roger McCreary as my defensive pick to click.
I mean, that's a good pick. He has been the most consistent. I like McCreary. Yeah. He's tough. He's physical. He's plays angry, but he plays with the air. He plays with the chip. Like, you can see him out there. Like, he plays with that thing that many people, like, you can't coach it.
Mm-hmm.
He has that dog in him. He always wants to compete. He always wants to. It's just like he want to fight, not literally fight, but he wants to fight every play. And that's the type. He reminds me of Blaine, but just at the cornerback position.
Yeah, I mean, I like him. And the one thing I love about him, I know this is kind of like not a big stat, but he can tackle in space. I mean, he'll make the play. He'll come up and run through somebody's face. So, I mean, I think that's a good pick, but I think Amon Hicker's going to get an interception.
Those are our picks to click.
Why you sound all sad, man?
Here on the program, presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment. Here's my question for you two, kind of going forward, which is, we know on the road the Titans haven't been very good. We know they're not good in the red zone. We know they're not good at protecting the quarterback. We know they've had their drops. We know they've had their defensive issues.
It's a lot of stuff.
At what point, when it comes to this road losing streak, do we look at the coach and say, how much of this is your fault? Because, yes, they've got personnel issues. Mm-hmm. But while I go with those personnel issues, they don't seem to have them at home.
And that's why I said, I mean, listen, it's not like they're taking a fresh new 22 on the road and they say, oh, y'all playing, y'all not doing a good job, but we're going to play these guys at home. That's not happening. I think in this business, there are two people that sometimes get the most blame or the most credit. It's the head coach and the quarterback. Sometimes I think they get too much credit for what's going on, and I think sometimes they get too much blame for what's going on. So isn't it about time that Vrabel gets too much of the blame and we can kind of sort of sort it out once that happened? But this team has been doing and making the same mistakes over and over and over again, so much so that he has no answers for him. So, again, this is your team. Whether you like it or not, everything at the end of the day falls right on your lap. You know, what are you going to do to fix all of this bad stuff that is going on?
Yeah, and I think it's the leaders also. I mean, because Simmons consistently talks about we need to execute better. We got to do this. We got to do that. So you do that at home, they got to make sure they do it on the road. So I think the leaders got to step up and say, you know what, enough is enough, and come out here and win a road game.
So I want to read to you guys something that Blake Bedingfield wrote at paulkaharski.com. You guys know Blake.
Yeah.
You know, longtime front office executive for the Titans, saying, quote, there shouldn't be a coach, scout, or front office person in the Titans building upset about this roster. Each and every person was given a voice throughout the process, and whether they chose to use that voice or go along with groupthink is one of the problems this roster is dealing with.
Is there a lie in there?
I mean, I think we know that there are certain limitations as to what you're able to do in an offseason.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, again, like Skoronski, I think Skoronski will be a good guard. He's not right now. Like, I want everybody out there to know he is not playing very well right now. But I think over time he'll be a good guard or he'll be a good lineman, whatever.
Right.
But we don't know how much money the owner was allowing them to spend. They still spent some, and they spent it poorly.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the guys that you don't like, you chose to keep. And Brewer, you chose to keep. That's not the fact that your center is 270. That's your fault. You chose to keep him and give him $4 million. So to this point, you chose to put Chig as your starting tight end.
Yeah.
I would agree that there shouldn't be a coach, scout, or front office person in the Titans building. And I guess what I'm saying to this is the John Robinson excuse shouldn't exist anymore.
No, it shouldn't. No, it's over with. He's gone.
Like, we know you traded A.J. Brown, and you'd be better if you had A.J. Brown, but that is, at this point, spilt milk, and that man took it on the cross for that.
Uh-huh.
So now, I mean, it's hard for me. Like, probably where I'm most discouraged is that I don't have faith in the decision makers going forward right now with this organization. And this roster and this free agency class of Andre Dillard, and, you know, we already, you know, went over the whole drafting the guard before the franchise quarterback, which doesn't make any sense. The running back in the third round, like, I understand that he is a nice complement to Derrick Henry as a running back in the third round. But you need linemen. You need receivers. You need defense. You don't need a second running back. You can go get a second running back like you did with Dontrell Hilliard off the scrap heap for $1 million. And so I guess I just don't have any faith in the operation going forward. And I think that's my biggest level of discouragement when it comes to the Titans.
Well, it's going to be I think I'll start making that determination based on what they do this offseason, even though it's far in front of us. But, yeah, there is a responsibility that should be shared across the board with this roster. You had an opportunity to solidify the offensive line in a certain way. You chose not to spend the money. Okay, you didn't. But the money you did spend, it's not working. And that should fall on everybody who had a hand in putting this roster together.
Yeah, and then the guys that you brought in, they're not panning out, and they're not doing what you thought they were going to do. Look at Dillard. Dillard he struggled from day one from Kevin to now. Then you got Alshazire, however you pronounce his name. He came in on fire, but then when he gets in the game, he's basically absent. Then you got Arden Key, same situation. In camp, he looked like a world beater, but then he gets in the games and he's non-existent. So the things that you thought were going to work, they didn't work.
And how much does that discourage you about this group? Analyzing, evaluating, and fixing the problems going forward.
I mean, it's kind of tough. I mean, you're going to have to fix it quick. And right now, you're in a season to where you can't fix it. You got to fix it on the offseason. But I think going on from now, they're going to have to figure out the offensive line situation. They're going to have to figure out to get some reliable receivers in here, but also get some coaches in there that can develop all these players.
See, here's the other thing, too. When it comes to making all these changes, I don't see Vrabel willing to make these kind of changes. I see Vrabel willing
to
think that the personnel wasn't that good, and Vrabel saying, you know, nope, we're going to stay the course here with Bowen and Kelly and my line coach and my receiver coach and my DB coach and my I mean, he'll make some minor changes because everybody always makes some minor changes. He does. I just don't see Vrabel raising the hand and saying, I screwed up the offensive line coach.
But should you let him go?
Like the O-line coach?
Like,
or
no, Vrabel, because that's what Mularkey did. He said that I'm keeping my coaches. So what's the difference between Mularkey and Mike Vrabel?
I'm going to be completely honest with you guys, and this is just my opinion. And I wouldn't fire, like, if I owned the team. Mm-hmm. And this is why I always take, like, you know, firing coaches very seriously on the radio. Because, absolutely, like, if a team decides to fire a coach, they can't go back on it, right? Uh-huh. Like, you can't fire the coach and then a couple weeks later say, oh, that was a bad idea, let's have a do-over, right? So I take, you know, saying whether or not a coach should be fired very seriously. I do not believe that Mike Vrabel is the right coach for where this organization is right now. And I think that by putting him in a position to be a part of the evaluation process and the decision-making of the roster, I think is letting the toothpaste out of the tube. You can't go to Vrabel and say, okay, you're just the coach and he's just the GM now. Once you've already let him have that kind of power, to then take that away would essentially be demoting him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you can do that. So I just don't believe Vrabel is the guy to get them out of this.
Well, I guess the question would be,
but I wouldn't fire him, even though I don't have faith in Vrabel turning this around.
I guess the question would be, then, did Vrabel ever have that ability to truly evaluate, you know, personnel and to put it all together?
Can I ask you, when did he and that's ever what, train
and
that?
And that's right, that's my question. It's like, what made you think that him evaluating talent was going to be the best for this organization?
Yeah.
If indeed that's what he's doing, because if you look at his track record, I don't see that part as going out and having, you know, say over the whole team. I could see him having a say over some linebackers, like, I like this linebacker, I don't. But to say you have, you know, say in how we put this whole roster together, did he ever have experience doing that? Now, if he did, okay, fine, but he's not doing a good job now. If he didn't, why then would I allow him to have that type of responsibility?
I never want him to have that responsibility. I mean, he wasn't trained in it.
Uh-huh.
Like, he was a player, then he was a D-line coach in college, then he was a linebacker coach, then he was a coordinator for a year, he's been a head coach for 5 years. At no point was he ever evaluating talent at the NFL level, right? Like, I think I'm biased, and I know you guys are too. I think we think that Floyd Reese is probably the best decision maker the Titans have ever had, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I absolutely. Mean, as far as, like, the authority, Floyd spent, like, 25 years as a coach.
Uh-huh.
And then he spent, like, 5 years as an assistant general manager. And then he became general manager. And he still made moves. But at least, like, there was an understanding of, like, both sides of the equation of coaching and of evaluating. And the Titans don't have any.
No, they don't. Now, if you wanted to, again, it goes back to if you hire Mike because that winning trait that he's been a part of and that leadership that he's been a part of, then okay. But I'm not then going to make him like so controller of personnel decisions, like evaluating talent. You can be a good motivator.
Right.
You can be, you know, good with the players, but that doesn't make you a good evaluator of the whole team. Now, you may be able to evaluate your position and say, this guy's good, this guy, oh, we can work with him. But you haven't, there's not enough experience to say you can evaluate the receivers, this guy, and put all of these things together to make it work perfectly. Because guys that have had this job for years and years still don't get it right.
Coming up next, we'll take a look at Vrabel's keys to the game, plus the final line of the sports books, and, of course, our game day prediction. And the big question as far as the prediction is concerned, will Chris Sanders pick the Titans today? We'll get to that coming up. It's the pregame show live from Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Time now for Mike Vrabel's key to a Titans victory as we are live at Twin Peaks out here in Cool Springs ahead of the Titans and the Jags in the award-winning pregame show. Mike Vrabel, time to fix the mistakes in the red zone.
When you have an opportunity, you have to take advantage of it. We know that the windows are tight. Things happen quick. Mistakes lead to, you know, longer yardage situations, unforced errors, whatever it may be. So I'd say that there's a lot of issues. Unfortunately, we need to correct them quickly.
Guys, your thoughts quickly on the red zone.
Oh, man, it's not good. It's not good. Red zone offense for them has been, you know, a sore spot for them this season. How do they generate points as an offense in the red zone? Because, again, they're good from – they're okay from the 20 to the 20. Let's not say they're great. They're okay from the 20 to the 20. By that, they need to figure out – and to me, I think you got to incorporate three guys into the offense in the red zone. Wiley, I like Wiley, big body guy. Give him an opportunity. Obviously, D-Hop. And then Chris Moore. I think you got to give those three guys an opportunity to make plays because everybody, I mean, you're not getting it from anybody else.
Yeah, and the thing about it is they're getting down there, but the things that stop them from getting into the end zone, number one, penalties, missed assignments, and they're consistently getting sacked to make them have to get field goals. So if they can clean up those three things, I think they can score some touchdowns. But at the end of the day, they got to make sure they put some playmakers in the game.
Jacksonville is a 6.5-point favorite. The line did move a little bit to 7, but it has gone back to 6.5. So basically a touchdown favorite. And according to ESPN Analytics, Jacksonville has a 70% chance to win today's game. Time now to make our game day predictions. Who wins today and why? The one that everybody is waiting on. Christopher Dwayne Sanders.
Better known as Raj.
Chris has not picked against the Titans one time this season. You are now on the clock.
I'm on the
Chris
clock.
Sanders, Titans and the Jags today. Who wins?
Here we go. I'm going to go with the Jags 24-10.
He really don't believe that.
I don't believe that, but I'm going to go with Jags 24-10. And the reason why I say the Jags is you got an offensive line that's struggling. You can't score in the red zone 2-for-8 the last two games. So I'm going with the Jags.
You know it's bad when you've lost Chris Sanders.
Yeah, but I think Chris is just doing it because he figures, okay, if I say Jags, Tennessee are really
bad.
But I'm not taking that approach. I'm picking the Jags. Until the Titans can show me that they can win a game outside of Nissan Stadium, then I'm going to go against them every time, especially with the roster that they have. So I'm picking the Jaguars 27-17.
Ooh. I think that the Jags minus 6.5 is free money. I think Jacksonville is easily going to win this game. I think today is the day that the dam breaks.
Ooh.
I think Jacksonville wins 38-6.
Whoa.
I think that it is going to be a blowout, and I think it's going to be an incredibly frustrating Sunday and an incredibly wild and entertaining week of Thanksgiving radio programs on Stillman and Company. With all, I mean, this is where I think the dam breaks, where the defense finally gets their, just their comeuppance, and the offense can't block, and Levis gets killed and turns the ball over. Jacksonville, big winners today, 38-6.
Okay, first of all, what does comeuppance mean?
You know, they get what's coming up.
Yeah, they're coming up. Yeah, I get it. I know where you're coming from.
That's going to do it for us, everybody. We will be back next Sunday ahead of the Titans and the Panthers. Everybody, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Appreciate you, Doc.
And we will see you. Enjoy the games. Live from Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, it's the pregame show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.